All right, so we're going to talk about which antiemetic for undifferentiated vomiting. Two housekeeping items. First thing, I'd like to disclose that I have nothing to disclose. I still do laundry at the laundromat. And secondly, because we have a lot of material to cover, I'd appreciate if you would just hold your questions until the end so we could get through everything. All right, so since we're at Caesar's Palace, I think it's only appropriate that we talk about the Romans. As you know, the Romans were known for their extravagant and decadent banquets. They had multiple courses and loads of wine that was consumed, feasting that lasted all night long. And the question is, how did the Romans manage to gorge themselves nonstop all night long? So apparently, the upper class of Romans were actually gluttonous bulimics. So according to Seneca, the Romans would vomit so they could eat more, and they would eat so they could vomit. And what is actually really interesting about the Romans is their idea of table etiquette. I guess it's, or maybe it's more disgusting or disturbing. They actually didn't feel it necessary to get up from the table to vomit. So they would just lean over and hurl into some bowls that were under the couch or under the tables, and there was some poor slave's job description to go around crawling on the ground and mopping up after them. So I guess each great civilization has their own idiosyncrasies. All right, so let's get to the meat of the talk. And I know a lot of you are probably out there thinking, what could she possibly talk about for 30 minutes? I mean, isn't the answer to this question just one word? Isn't it Zofran? So my goal today is to convince you that Zofran may not always be the right answer for certain types of vomiting. So what I'm going to do is go over four common scenarios of vomiting that you would encounter in the ED on any given day. And through those case discussions, we're going to talk about the neurophysiology of vomiting, the vomiting reflex, different antiemetic drug classes, and then we're also going to go over some novel and alternative therapies that you may not know about. So I know this is a discussion on undifferentiated vomiting, but I think it's pretty rare that a good history and physical does not yield a potential etiology for vomiting. So we all know that the vomiting differential is pretty vast. So there are GI causes, there's cardiovascular causes, drug-induced, toxins, infectious, CNS disorders, metabolic disorders like thyroid and diabetes, pregnancy. And then there's psych causes like psychogenic vomiting and bulimia. But I think you're going to be way more successful at choosing the right drug and treating vomiting if you identify a cause and make sure that you choose a drug that targets those involved pathways and receptors. So this is going to be vomiting reflex 101. It's pretty basic. The command central is aptly named the vomiting center, and it's located in the medulla. And it receives different inputs from different parts of the body. So let's start from the top down. So the cerebral cortex, the higher cortical centers in the cerebral cortex send inputs to the vomiting center, and that's why psychic stimuli like odors and emotions and fear, visual stimuli, prior experiences like chemo patients can precipitate anticipatory vomiting. There's a part of the brain called the chemoreceptor trigger zone, or the CTZ. In this area of the brain, the blood-brain barrier is poorly developed, and so it's more readily accessible to emetic substances like opiates and chemo and alcohol drugs. There's intracranial pressure receptors. There are afferents from the vestibular system, the inner ear, that send its signal via the vestibular cochlear nerve or the cranial nerve 8 to the vomiting center. And then finally, there's some visceral afferents from the GI tract, from the heart, even from the ducts, which is why you can get vomiting with kidney stones and biliary colic. So all of these inputs converge on the vomiting center, and then the vomiting center decides, sort of like the commander-in-chief, it assimilates all of its advisors and then decides if it needs to execute the vomiting reflex. And each of these afferent pathways have their own neurotransmitters and receptors. Don't worry about this. We're going to go into more detail. All right, so let's start with a case. This is your first case of the night. It's a 75-year-old lady. She's got a history of hypertension. She comes in with acute onset of room spinning. She denies any auditory symptoms. Her neuro exam is pretty unremarkable except for fatigable nystagmus. And you suspect that she has peripheral vertigo. She's actively vomiting on exam. So we're going to make this interactive since it's a small group. Which drug should be your first-line agent? How many vote A? Oh, nobody's in. Okay. All right. Good. B, meclizine. C, promethazine. D, metoclopramide. People are not awake here. D, E, lorazepam. Oh, good. A lot of people. Okay. So the correct answer is actually C, C, promethazine. So let's go into why that is. Okay, so let's talk about the vestibular system, the receptors that are involved. So the inner ear sends its signals via the cranial nerve 8 to the vomiting center, and the ones that are involved here are the histamine and acetylcholine receptors. Notice there's no serotonin receptors here, which is why Zofran is not the best option, and why antihistamines and anticholinergics are probably better. So let's talk about those classes of drugs. The antihistamines includes Dramamine, Benadryl, Phenergan, Bisteril, Anavert, and besides its histaminic antihistamine properties, it's also an anticholinergic, which makes it appropriate because it's got, since the vestibular system is full of histamine and cholinergic receptors. The other use that we have for a histamine antagonist is for prophylaxis or treatment of extrapyramidal symptoms that we oftentimes see with the dopamine antagonists. All right, so let's talk a little bit about Phenergan or promethazine. So Phenergan is classified as an antihistamine, even though it is a phenethiazine. Its primary target receptor is actually the central and peripheral H1 receptors. And it's really probably used as a second-line agent in most cases after ondansetron or Zofran, except in the case of vertigo. So vertigo, it's probably your first-line treatment. There are side effects. It is a phenethiazine derivative, so you would expect to have extrapyramidal symptoms and depression. Respiratory depression, sedation. Now, this is in 2006, the Institute of Safe Medication Practices issued a recommendation that it must be given intramuscularly instead of intravenously. And this was a response to several cases of blood vessel damage at the infusion site, as well as inadvertent intraarterial administration that led to local tissue necrosis, gangrene, loss of parts of digits and extremities. And so here's an example of a patient who had gangrene resulting from promethazine extravasation. So you can, I think at some hospitals, they've actually taken it off of the formulary completely, but you can, I think, give it IV, but you're going to kind of do this at your own med legal risk. Okay, so the other receptor that we've talked about that's also in the vestibular system is the cholinergic receptor. Remember, reach far back into your cobwebs of your mind, that there are two types of cholinergic receptors. There's the muscarinic, and then there's the nicotinic. And so the scopolamine patch targets muscarinic receptor. And so this is something we're probably not using in the ED, mainly probably because of this delayed onset. So it's about 4 hours after application. But it does last a long time, up to 72 hours. It's mainly used for the prevention of motion sickness. So once you're vomiting, it's probably not as good. And if you, it's also useful in vertigo, but probably not as well as it does for motion sickness. But the good thing is, it bypasses the stomach. You don't need to swallow it. You can just put it behind the ear. And the side effects are what you expect for anticholinergic drugs, like dry mouth, dilated pupils, sedation, and some skin irritation as well. Okay, so let's revisit this case. So this is the case of the lady that we thought probably had peripheral vertigo, and she was actively vomiting on exam. So remember, the vestibular system has cholinergic, and it also has histaminic receptors. And so you want to target that by giving an antihistamine. And so promethazine is actually an antihistamine. I think that's the one thing we don't actually think about. We think of it as a dopamine antagonist, but it's really an antihistamine, which is why promethazine, IM, is the correct answer. Meclizine would be the correct answer if the patient wasn't actively vomiting. Again, ondansetron is not the correct answer because there are no serotonin receptors involved. It might work, but probably not as well. Metoclopramide has shown no proven efficacy for vertigo, so you don't want to give that. And just so you know, I think all of us, you know, these are all vestibular suppressants, so it treats the symptom of vomiting. But if you read any ENT or neurology text, they'll say that drug treatment is ineffective for BPPV, and actually the definitive treatment is epley maneuver. You know, you want to move all those otoliths back into the utricle where they belong. But I think everyone has seen the vertigo patient that's actively puking everywhere. They're miserable, and they couldn't tolerate the epley maneuver, so drug treatment is going to be required before that. And you would not be wrong by giving some benzo as well. And I think a lot of you raised your hand for benzo. But it's as a single agent, it's probably not as effective. And let's talk a little bit about benzos. So benzos are GABA agonists. So remember, GABA is an inhibitory neurotransmitter. So it basically suppresses or depresses the CNS stimuli and the vestibular stimuli. So by giving GABA, you're just blunting the vestibular stimuli. But you don't want to use this as a single agent because as a single agent, it's a very weak antiemetic. But it works great in low doses for vertigo. And it's not, you don't want to send them out on this because this actually prevents them from doing effective vestibular rehabilitation. But it's something to consider definitely as an adjunct.
How does it work?
Oh, it's just, it decreases the vestibular stimuli. So it just suppresses everything. So it's sort of a symptomatic treatment, not so much that it's, you know, treating the vertigo, which is why epley maneuver is actually better. Okay, so you're so lucky, you get another puking patient. Your second patient is the six-month-old who comes in 7 to 8 episodes of emesis for the last 2 days, some diarrhea that's non-bloody, no rash. He's not able to keep down any fluids, no fevers. Exam's pretty unremarkable, other than he looks a little bit mildly, a little bit dehydrated. So what is your first-line antiemetic here? This is a very easy question, right? So A, ondansetron, B, prochlorperazine, C, promethazine, D, metoclopramide, E. Does anybody actually remember this? Trimethobenzamide, this is Tigan suppositories. Yeah. Okay, so the correct answer is A. I think this is an easy one, right? We've all been beaten over the head with paper after paper, LLSA review articles that say ondansetron is the drug of choice for pediatric gastroenteritis. Tigan suppositories, by the way, were taken off the market because they had a lack of proven efficacy. So a meta-analysis in 2008 concluded that ondansetron is the only antiemetic agent with consistent proven efficacy in reducing vomiting for gastroenteritis, and that's because it's decreased the rates of IV fluids, length of stay, hospitalization rates, and oftentimes a single dose of oral dissolving tablet is effective, a one-time treatment in the ED. And what about the other antiemetic classes? Well, Zofran's really the only one that has been proven and studied in large-scale randomized controlled trials. The other drugs, and I'm talking about the dopamine antagonists like Reglan and Phenergan and Compazine, they haven't had much study, but also they cause somnolence, and so that sort of interferes with oral rehydration and the ability to assess the altered mental status. So generally, you always just reach for your ondansetron in the pediatric population. So this is the money slide right here. Everybody always asks, how low can you go? What's lower limit? And so this is a study that was done by Reeves in 2002. This is on chemo patients. You can give it as young as 1 month of age. And the dosing is based on a study by Rosalind. This is a randomized controlled trial. The IV dosing is 0.1 to 0.5 milligrams per kilo with a maximum dose of 4. And then the PO dosing for the oral dissolving tablet, not the regular tablet, is a weight-based dose. So less than 15 kilos gets 2 milligrams, 15 to 30 kilos gets 4 milligrams, and greater than 30 kilos gets 8 milligrams. All right, so how does ondansetron work? Well, let's look at the GI tract. So the main predominant receptor in the GI tract, in the vagus nerve, and the sympathetic nerves, is serotonin. So serotonin is the target, and which is why this works great for gastroenteritis. I think all of us are familiar with Zofran. That's the main one that we're familiar with in the ED population. The other three haven't really been studied in the ED population. It's mainly in the post-op nausea, vomiting, chemo patients. So there were trials in the chemo patients that showed that PO was just as efficacious as the IV formulation. And I should mention one thing about efficacy trials in antiemetics. There are really, very rarely, any head-to-head comparisons of drugs in the ED patient population. So most of the studies are in chemo patients or in post-op nausea and vomiting patients, and so we're just extrapolating that data, so there's very few randomized controlled trials in our ED population, so just take that with a grain of salt. But in one of the few trials, Broad et al. In academic emergency medicine, said that basically promethazine or Phenergan is the same efficacy as Zofran, but Zofran had less sedating effects, which is probably why we reach for Zofran first in most cases. Zofran is very well tolerated. The very, the most frequently cited side effect is this mild headache in about 15 to 20% of patients. And there's a transient dizziness sometimes that people complain about, blurred vision with IV infusion. And there's also reports of increased diarrheal episodes in the pediatric patient population, like 48 hours out. And the one caution I would say with Zofran is that for liver patients, so patients that are severe cirrhosis, that you want to make sure that you don't overdose them. So the maximum dose they can get is 8 milligrams in a day. Okay, so your third patient, 30-year-old, who has a history of migraine, she comes in with her typical migraine, and she's got the associated symptoms, and she has a lot of vomiting, no fever, no neck pain. Her neurologic, she has no neurologic complaints, and her neuro and fundoscopic exam are pretty unremarkable. So which IV drug should you order? A, ondansetron. Nobody? Okay. B, prochlorperazine. This is Compazine. Good. C, promethazine. No? Okay. D, aprepitant. Everyone's like, what the heck is that? And then E, dexamethasone. Okay, so it seems like the majority of you who participated with was going with Compazine, which is the correct answer. Okay, so let's, I think everybody's got their own cocktail of drugs that they like to use to treat acute migraine in the ED. I've listed the usual suspects on the left. Valproic acid is a relatively new drug that has been added to the armamentarium. But really, increasing mounting evidence has shown that dopamine antagonist is the first-line agent to go for treating migraines as well as for treating the vomiting associated with migraines. So let's talk about this class of drugs. So dopamine antagonists block at the D2 receptor in the chemoreceptor zone, chemoreceptor trigger zone in the brain. It used to be used as antipsychotics. There are three classes. There are the phenethiazines, butyrophenones, and then the benzamides. And as a class, they are dose-dependent, so if you give more, you give it more frequently, they do have an additive effect. However, if they don't work, if they start to not work at all, you don't want to give another dopamine antagonist in the same class. You should move to a different class of drugs. It's class C pregnancy safety profile, and the side effects are, because it's most of the time it's due to, this is probably the number one thing, is extrapyramidal effects like akathisia, so you'll get that severe uncomfortable feeling of restlessness, dystonia. Sometimes patients get those sustained muscle contractions and they get twisting or abnormal repetitive, abnormal postures. One thing I should mention here, and this is what our pharmacy keeps trying to push on us, is to recognize that this is actually a little bit dangerous for the elderly patient, that you want to go low dose as much as possible because it is sedating and it can cause hypotension. And it may lower seizure threshold. So let's talk about each of these classes. So the first class is the phenethiazine class. And it's got compazine, thorazine, and phenergid. I think sometimes it's difficult to remember the difference between procloperazine and promethazine because they sound so similar. So my trick is procloperazine has a C in it, so does compazine, and so that's how I remember that procloperazine is compazine. So we'll talk about compazine a little bit more. Phenergid we've already talked about. Thorazine's really fallen out of favor because of the profound orthostasis that can occur. So compazine has been shown in randomized controlled trials to work really, really well in migraines. It's superior to sumatriptan, Reglan, and Toradol. And it also works really well in gastroenteritis. And this is also another randomized controlled trial here comparing IV compazine and IV phenergan. Compazine was much more effective, actually. Effective, quicker in onset, and less sedating. The only sad thing is that there's a nationwide shortage in compazine. So they're taking away our phenergan, they took away droperidol. Now there's a shortage in IV compazine, although supposedly the manufacturer is going to fix that this month. So, all right, so the second drug class is butyrophenones, and these were previously used as tranquilizers, and droperidol was sort of like a miracle drug. It did work great. I mean, it worked great for migraines. It was better than the other D2 antagonists. And it works well for just nausea of any cause in the ED. It's better than IV Reglan and Compazine. But unfortunately, in 2001, the FDA published in a black box warning for QT prolongation resulting in torsades. So that has caused a dramatic decline in the use of droperidol. But you can still give it. I think my pharmacy, I called down there, they still have it, and you can still give it. You just need to make sure you do an EKG and document a QTC, and then you got to have that patient on the monitor for 2 to 3 hours afterward. So again, it's sort of take that with your own med legal risk if something, God forbid, were to happen. There is some limited data that shows that IV Haldol may have a role for migraines, but it's a very long-acting drug, 18 hours. So there's still study that needs to be done. Okay. So we talked about droperidol. The last class is benzamide. So the drug that we are most familiar with is Reglan. There's also Tigan, as we talked about. Domperidone is something used in Europe mainly. That's kind of their go-to drug. This is a drug that's mainly, because it's a prokinetic, meaning it helps enhances gastric motility. We use it in patients that have diabetic gastroparesis. It's also used in migraines as well. But at standard doses, it's really not that great of an antiemetic. So most of the time we reach for that as a second or third line, so we start with usually Zofran, then Phenergan, and then Reglan, except in the case of gastroparesis or a patient with migraines. The one case you don't want to give Reglan is a patient that has evidence of a bowel obstruction, because that could obviously make it worse. And the good thing about it is it's class B, so if you have a pregnant migraine patient, then this would be appropriate. Okay, so speaking of pregnant, this is her last case. She's a 26-year-old Gravida 1 at 8 weeks. presents with severe vomiting and inability to keep down fluid. She's vomited 20 times, over 20 times over the past 3 days. No diarrhea, pain, fever, dysuria, hematuria, vaginal bleeding. She's a little tachycardic, and her blood pressure is 95 over 50. So what's your first-line drug for this patient? A, B, C, D, E, and F. Okay, so the answer is either A or C, and that's mainly based on the fact that safety profile. So the ondansetron and metoclopramide are both class B drugs. Promethazine is a class C drug. D-dexamethasone is used for patients who are mainly failing outpatient treatment, so it's probably not your first-line drug. So let's talk about each of those. Hyperemesis is defined by an episode of protracted vomiting, inability to tolerate fluids, and then they have ketones in their urine. Really affects it's pretty uncommon. 80% of women have nausea vomiting associated with their pregnancy, but only 0.3 to 1.5% of patients actually have hyperemesis, and most of the times it does resolve by 20 weeks. So the usual treatment is IV fluids, of course, and then giving some antiemetic. And I've listed those common ones that with their pregnancy class. So promethazine and prochlorperazine are classified as class C. Long-term meta-analyses have shown that there are no harmful fetal effects, although there are case reports of associated cleft defects, skeletal limb abnormalities that are associated with them, but no clinical trials have actually borne that out. But you'll see that OB feels totally comfortable giving patients Compazine and Phenergan. Okay, so most patients rarely need hospitalization. You usually send them home with some sort of antiemetic. Most of the time you can give them some sort of class B drug or a class C drug. You might consider, this is something you may not consider all the time, but vitamin B6 is a great, has been proven to be efficacious for hyperemesis. And then thiamine replacement. If a patient's been having vomiting for a long period of time, greater than 3 weeks, then you want to prevent Wernicke's syndrome or Wernicke's encephalopathy, you give them some thiamine. If they're still refractory, and the only reason that I put ondansetron here is basically because of the cost. Even though it's been off patent, I was actually shocked to find that ondansetron is actually super expensive. It's like $22 per pill, and that compare that with Compazine, Reglan, or Phenergan, those are like 30, 40 cents a pill. So that's something to consider if a patient doesn't have insurance that covers it or it's not on formulary or whatever. Ondansetron is actually still extremely expensive. So for a 30-pack of tablets would be over $600. So that's the only reason I put it down here. But if they have insurance and they can pay for it, ondansetron is a perfectly good choice. Prochlorperazine suppositories, prednisolone. So these are steroid tapers mainly for patients who are failing outpatient treatment, need admission, and then they get sent down on steroids. Okay, so that's one class of antiemetics that we haven't talked about, but it's nobody knows the mechanism. The steroids used in hyperemesis situations, methylprednisolone, prednisolone, and dexamethasone. And the reason is that there's been conflicting evidence in randomized controlled trials that steroids do anything, and there has been epidemiological studies that show that maybe there's some association with some cleft defects, so this is why it's sort of reserved for those patients who can't tolerate outpatient treatment. The standard uses, though, that we don't see in the ED is that commonly you'll see those chemo patients will take a Zofran and they'll take a dexamethasone tablet. So this is commonly used in the outpatient world as well as for post-op nausea and vomiting. So those are common uses. Okay, so let's say this patient comes back, same patient, 1 week later, and she's had no relief with prescribed antiemetics. And she's a San Franciscan hippie granola girl, and she says, I don't want any more drugs. What else can I do besides pop pills? So what alternative therapies can you recommend? And I should say that this is these therapies that we're going to talk about is for all vomiting, not necessarily for hyperemesis. Okay, so ginger. Ginger has been a long-time ancient remedy used in the Chinese and Indian pharmacopoeia. It actually works, apparently. There have been meta-analyses and randomized controlled trials that show significant or superior effect over placebo in a lot of different types of vomiting, so that post-op vomiting, chemo vomiting, morning sickness, motion sickness. And apparently it's not just voodoo. They've actually isolated chemicals within the ginger compound that shows that there is some effect on the GI tract receptors as well as CNS effects. So the recommended dose is 1 gram of ginger powder per day divided TID or QID. Acupuncture. Apparently this too works. When they did randomized controlled trials with sham procedures, they showed that there was superiority in the cases of chemo, post-op, and actually pregnancy-induced vomiting. This is not something that we do in the emergency department, but it's something you can suggest to your patients. The most common site that they use is the P6 Naguan acupoint, which is located on the volar surface of the wrist that's 2 to 3 finger breadth below the wrist crease. And it can be invasive or non-invasive stimulation, so you can use needles or you could use acupressure. So even just applying pressure manually every 15 minutes for 15 minutes every 4 hours supposedly works. And you can also even use one of those wristbands with the little acupressure button so that right over that site. So something to consider. Cannabinoids. Well, wouldn't it be awesome if we could just order some weed stat to the patient's bedside? Well, there has been lots of trials. There were a lot of trials that was looking at the role of cannabinoids in chemo-induced vomiting. These were the drugs that were studied. The studies had a lot of methodologic flaws, but the expert consensus said that there was superiority to placebo and prochlorperazine, domperidone. But the side effects are pretty significant, and about 10 to 15% of patients actually dropped out of the study because of significant side effects. Peppermint oil is a longtime folk remedy. They believe that the menthol component has a calcium channel blockade effect that decreases smooth muscle contraction, causes some antispasmodic action. It's been traditionally prescribed for irritable bowel syndrome. There's lots of formulations of it. There's no standardized dose. There's little downside, though, so that's something to consider. Now, this is an interesting one, because all the other ones you can't really do in the ED, but this one you could. They've studied aromatherapy for post-op nausea vomiting patients, and basically, this sounds awful, you basically take 2 to 3 whiffs of the isopropyl alcohol standard alcohol wipe, and apparently, this is a randomized controlled trial where they did IV ondansetron, had a slower onset than this isopropyl alcohol. Maybe it just shocks your system so much that you just don't feel like vomiting. But apparently, there's not been enough study on this. But you know, it's like super cheap. It's like right there. If your nurse can't get an IV in, you could just throw some alcohol at your patient and see if it helps. So the only thing is that it does seem to last only like 20 to 30 minutes, but it does provide immediate relief. Okay, and this is not really an alternative drug, but just a coming attraction. This drug is called aprepitant. I think you guys were wondering what that was, or emend. And so this is actually a class of drugs that you probably haven't heard about. This is the neurokinin NK1 receptor antagonist. And it's probably not something you've heard about because it's only been studied in the post-op nausea, vomiting, and chemo patients. But basically, it targets the substance P receptor called neurokinin 1, and that's also involved in the vomiting reflex. And the preliminary randomized controlled trials show that there was better effect than superior effect compared to ondansetron 4 milligrams. And there was very few side effects. So, and not only that, but it lasted even 24 to 48 hours out. So it'll be really interesting to see if and when this hits the ED. But more study needs to be done, and we haven't had any. All right, so my take-home points are that I hope I've impressed upon you the importance of trying to figure out the reason why somebody's vomiting and then choosing the appropriate agent based on the pathway involved and the receptors involved. Zofran probably is the number one first-line drug of choice for undifferentiated vomiting, except in certain scenarios. So the ones we talked about, vertigo, peripheral vertigo, remember that histamine and cholinergic receptors are the predominant ones there. So you want to give an antihistamine like Phenergan, and you might consider benzos as well to suppress the vestibular stimuli. Pediatric, the choice is ondansetron. You can give it as low as 1 month of age. Migraines, dopamine antagonist has actually been touted to be the first-line treatment. So that's your Phenergan, your Compazine, and your Reglan. Compazine is probably the best one. And then hyperemesis, reach for the class B drugs first, and then think about vitamin B6, ginger, and thiamine if they've been vomiting for a prolonged period of time. So thank you so much for your attention.